It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 45 million Americans live in poverty. Poverty, of course, affects people from all walks of life. Last week, WESA's Deanna Garcia reported on the prevalence of poverty among those who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, or asexual.
I struggle every day.
Lynn, who doesn't want to use her last name, lives just outside Pittsburgh. She identifies as lesbian and doesn't work because she's disabled. She's also diabetic and living on a very fixed income.
I'm on $4,000 worth of medication a month. If it weren't for food bank, I don't know how I would eat the way that I need to eat. You know, I simply can't afford. I can't afford it.
Lynn's circumstances may be unique, but her situation is not. Of people who identify somewhere on the LGBTQIA spectrum, some 30% are struggling with poverty. The reasons vary, but in Pennsylvania, one of the most often cited reasons is the lack of a statewide anti-discrimination policy that covers sexual orientation and gender identity. Lynn says in her working days, she experienced what that lack of protection can mean.
They made it very clear how when somebody comes in and they have the perception of being gay, that they'll find a reason not to hire that person.
The unemployment rate is higher for gays and lesbians than for heterosexuals. 7.6% of lesbian couples live in poverty, compared to 5.7% of married heterosexual couples. That's according to the American Community Survey from UCLA's Williams Institute. When you throw in other factors, such as race and gender identity, the rate can be even higher. The survey found African-American same-sex couples have poverty rates more than twice that of heterosexual married African-Americans. And for people who identify as transgender, it's even worse, according to director of the Gay and Lesbian Community Center of Pittsburgh, Lindsay Sickler.
A lot of times, my trans sisters and brothers cannot get employment because they haven't changed their ID yet. There's a lot of questions. People don't know how to handle them. And while there are wonderful organizations and corporations that do have these protections, they're few and far between and not always hiring.
Transgender people are twice as likely to be unemployed as cisgender people and four times as likely to have an annual household income of under $10,000. That's according to the National Transgender Discrimination Survey. And Sickler says once you're living in poverty, it can be hard to get ahead.
How are you supposed to run a race and expect to win when you have cinder blocks tied to your ankles?
It's clear not everyone sees it that way. Message boards and comment sections of articles relating to poverty are often filled with people saying things like, just get a better job, or pull yourself up by your bootstraps, or go back to school. But Sickler says it's not that easy for people who identify as LGBTQIA.
When you're so used to being judged or fearing of that judgment, it makes you not even want to try. It almost becomes a disability.
Helping people lift themselves out of poverty, in part, becomes a matter of figuring out individual circumstances and navigating a difficult system.
There is a complete lack of understanding and a lot of vehement cruelty.
And in the case of Lynn, she tries to stay optimistic, but says she doesn't see her circumstances changing anytime soon, especially because of her disability.
It is depressing. It is absolutely depressing. And, you know, it is a full-time job to live with no job.
Lynn cites the overturning of Pennsylvania's same-sex marriage ban as one step toward progress for the LGBTQIA community. But Sickler and Netto say that while so much attention is on the fight for marriage equality, more attention needs to be paid to economic equality and ensuring all people have fair and equal access to jobs and safety net services.
And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, as I mentioned earlier, 45 million Americans live in poverty, and there is an increasing number who, as Lynn's story suggests, deal with issues of poverty. They've become especially challenging for LGBTQ people as they grow older. Joining us today to talk about poverty and aging among LGBTQ people is Kathy Boyle, coordinator of Older Adult Services for the PERSAD Center and part of a national group called SAGE, Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. Kathy Boyle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And also with us is August Buzz Pusateri, a retired pharmacist who was diagnosed as HIV positive in the early 1980s. Buzz is chair of the Pitt Men's Study Community Advisory Board. He lives in a retirement community in Oakland. Buzz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. And for the sake of this conversation, we'll be using the acronym LGBTQ to keep it consistent. We'd like to hear from members of the LGBTQ community about the challenges you are facing, and perhaps we can, in sharing and engaging in this conversation, we can come up with ideas and solutions to help others. Kathy, let's start by having you explain the challenges that are faced by people. I think we heard a lot of it in the story presented by Deanna Garcia, but there are challenges faced by people in the LGBTQ community. Talk about what those challenges are.
Well, I think for the older gay person, LGBTQ person, there's so much history in a lifetime of marginalization and discrimination that many people in my community hide. They stay in the closet, go back in the closet when they're elderly for fear of discrimination. And so that creates a burden that they have to deal with as they go on with their elderly years.
And what services are available? What is out there to help people?
Well, our county has wonderful aging services. What concerns me is less than 20% of the elderly LGBTQ community is accessing any of those services that we're aware of.
And why is that?
It's a fear of discrimination, fear of being mistreated. I have an example of someone I've talked to who's an older woman who lives in a senior high rise, and she's afraid to tell people that she's a lesbian for fear that they will bully her, isolate her, gossip about her. So that fear creates impediments in many ways in your life.
So as you seek services, I mean, what information do you have to divulge? I mean, can't you keep your personal life private?
Certainly you can, but it makes it very difficult if you're going to develop a relationship with anyone if you can't tell them who you really are. For instance, if you've just lost a partner of 30 years and you are involved in services and appear to be depressed, but you don't feel that it's safe to tell them that you've lost a partner, then, you know, how does someone help you with the major depression in your life?
Buzz, what are the biggest challenges of aging and being out?
The biggest challenges, I guess, is not so much being it's a problem trying to find some sort of a common ground you have with other people that you are thrown into. Whenever you are, such as I have been, I just recently moved into it's a senior citizens complex there. Luckily, I know a couple of people that are there who are gay, and it helps a little bit. In fact, I've run into people that I've known in my working experience as well. It's difficult to perhaps share your sexuality with everybody that is in this building, because who knows what their feelings are. I find the people from my generation that the acceptance of gay, being gay or lesbian, LGBTQ, is not as like the younger people today. I think the younger people today are more comfortable with that. But I think people in my generation.
And what generation would that be? Because we're on radio. And so
I'm 76 years old. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Okay.
And but people from that generation, basically who were gay, found a group of friends that they associated with. Usually this all started in college. And they would have their own little social circle. And basically the only other way that you could socialize is by going to bars. And a lot of people don't like going to bars. And people that are living out in the rural areas in the suburbs, it's very difficult for them to be forthright about their sexuality. I had a rather unique experience in that I was profiled in an article in the Post-Gazette, and I was on a program on WQED as well, profiling me, and I just sort of came out to the entire world, besides my family and friends that knew of my sexuality and my HIV status too. And I might add that people who are elderly with HIV have a double whammy there, too, in trying to find acceptance. First of all, you have to still have that stigma with HIV, and then you will have that stigma with being gay or lesbian or LGBTQ.
So we mentioned that you're living in this – in a retirement community in Oakland. So,
right.
So within that community, you're saying you have to be – you're a little guarded?
I would say so, yes. I'm sure that it was a while before, since the Post-Gazette article and the WQED exposure there.
So you basically came out through the media?
Yes, yes.
Was that a little hard for your family?
Well, my family was pretty all gone. All I had was my nieces, and they were aware of my sexuality. They had no problems with that. And they knew, of course, they knew about my HIV because of my serious illnesses that I had gone through with my my two nieces, three nieces, really. And I don't think it was that hard. In fact, I thought it was a liberating experience. And I found out that people would come up to me on the street and say that they had seen the article in the paper, and they. They thought it was wonderful. And as a matter of fact, my cousin who lived in Ohio said it was very brave of me to do that. And I thought, well, it wasn't so much thinking about being brave, but trying to give out hope to people at that time, because that was just a few years after the cocktail came out that prolonged life for most people with HIV.
So I guess the biggest question is, are you getting the help that you need?
I get some of the help that I need.
But not all of it.
Not all of it, no. Because first of all, perhaps I don't know about it. Second of all, I'm sure there are programs out there that can probably help me financially, but I'm just not aware of them. So and you really have to go to get some of these this help. You have to get a case manager who will. Sort of work with you and steer you to these programs.
Kathy, so for someone who is in Buzz's situation, and I mean he represents or he is – his situation is representative of the situations of a lot of others. What can be done to bridge the gap here? If someone like Buzz, who's 76 years old, he's HIV positive and he's saying, I'm not getting all the help I need, what needs to be done here to bridge the gap?
Well, what PERSAT is trying to do with SAGE is to educate as many people in the social service who are providing aging with services, to educate them, to help them be culturally competent. One of the things that concerns me about the aging HIV population is the fact that people don't know it's still around, and they have some very misinformed notions of how you get HIV still. And so trying to educate them so they won't be fearful, that they can be accepting and open to Buzz's group is really important.
And how supportive are assisted living facilities? That's where Buzz lives. you know, how what is the reality out there, and what should be done within these facilities to make sure that people are getting fair and equitable treatment regardless of their sexual orientation?
I've done a lot of training with the assisted living facilities, and they were very open to hearing about the LGBTQ elderly population. But one of the questions they've asked is, well, who's going to teach my other residents not to be mean? So it was kind of eye-opening to me that they thought that anybody who was LGBTQ senior and open about that in their facilities might be mistreated. So I think that speaks to the belief that there still are reasons for my generation to be fearful about telling folks who they are.
Is there anything like a gay community center for senior citizens?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. PERSAD will be in a new facility at the end of January that will have room that is accessible where we can work to get isolated seniors in, where they can do some more socializing, and where we can provide resources, bring people in from aging agencies to get to know our community.
Does it seem harder to make ends meet as you're getting older? And what experience, Buzz, can you share about trying to access government agencies?
Well, luckily I've been able to and I think this is something that a lot of folks don't realize. There's a program through the Department of Welfare called SPBB, which is Special Pharmaceutical Benefit Programs. And basically what that does is to help defray the cost of HIV medications for folks who qualify for it. And it's a fairly high income range. I think it's somewhere around $40,000 a year. And it does, because some of these medications are very expensive, very expensive. If I didn't have this program, I would not be able to afford these medications and probably would not be sitting here talking right now. And other things that that I have received through social services, like when I was in the hospital, that I was able to get a Meals on Wheels program too. So that helps out too, because I get a meal that is very nutritious. It has all the five food components, and it helps out because a lot of times cooking for one person is very difficult, and sometimes you just don't feel like doing it. And this is a way of trying to get some nutrition into my life. Now, I'm able to make my own breakfast, which I do every day, but this Meals on Wheels is a big help in the middle of the day. And later on in the evening, I might have something light to eat. But that has been a program that I've had. I've been lucky to get into a program where that I can get somebody to come in and help with some light housework that you know, as I'm getting older, I'm finding not able to do things that I did maybe 10 years ago.
Well, sure. And for someone who is openly gay and who also is HIV positive, are you confident, or what is your level of confidence about turning to strangers for the help that you're getting, for medical help and the living support that you need? Can it be difficult?
It can be difficult. It all depends. But usually, whenever you talk with the folks that you're going to be dealing with, they are pretty savvy, and they have a understanding of what's happening with me and with anybody that if you have a professional, you're dealing with professionals. They are the ones that really have our understanding.
But attitudes are changing, but it hasn't always been that way, and it isn't necessarily that way, you know, in all cases now. Kathy, how are things changing? Is it getting better for people who are aging and are out?
I think it depends on the circumstances, where they are, who they're talking to. There are still situations where people may be looked down on, people talking too harshly, if spoken too harshly, if they are out and people don't approve of that. So it's a case-by-case scenario, really.
We're talking about the issues of and the challenges of aging and being out with Buzz Pusateri, a retired pharmacist who was diagnosed as HIV positive in the early 1980s. He's chair of the Pitt Men's Study Community Advisory Board. Also with us is an expert in this particular topic, and we're certainly happy to have her, Kathy Boyle, coordinator of older adult services for the Prasad Center and part of a national group called SAGE, Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. And Kathy Boyle, glad to have you with us. We welcome your calls and comments at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, #EPLive. And again, for the sake of this conversation, we're using the acronym LGBTQ to keep it consistent. And one of the things, Kathy, we were talking in the break about that poses challenges is the lack of of legislation to prevent discrimination based on sexual orientation. A number of members of the LGBTQ community in Pennsylvania can be legally discriminated against when it comes to hiring practices, when it comes to housing, simply based on their sexual orientation. Talk about the problem that creates for members, for those who identify themselves as LGBTQ, and for people who are out and who are aging.
Well, I can talk about an example of a gentleman I work with in one of the rural counties in western Pennsylvania. And he is not protected by anything except his home security system. And he has tremendous fear of his neighbors, which probably started about 20 years ago when he first moved there and kids were allowed to come to his door for trick-or-treat, and someone decided to tell everyone that he was gay. And since then, he's been nobody comes to his house at Halloween, and he's frightened to death of living there. And the amount of fear he has, which is generated as anxiety in his life, really cripples him and keeps him from being able to make decisions about things that would help his life. So the enormity of the fear that older people can have is just amazing, the impact that fear can have.
Is there a tendency to want to go back into the closet?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It can be safer there, but you can also then the person I was speaking of who's in senior high-rise, the concern is that you're going to slip at some point and then you sort of fall out of the closet and people think you've been lying to them. So the complications of not feeling safe enough to be honest from the get-go can be very enormous in an older person's life.
And is there a problem with some people either not wanting to go to the doctor or when they do go to the doctor, they're not forthcoming with all of the information that the doctor might need to know about their lives?
Absolutely. And there are particular health risks and health disparities with all parts of the LGBTQ community. And if you don't tell the doctor about your life and they don't ask you, so you don't feel that they're really interested in that, it's hard for you to get assessed for those particular risks and disparities.
And so what is the city and the community doing to prepare for the number of LGBTQ people aging in the next few years?
Well, I think the city and county have to prepare for the general silver tsunami is how I've heard it described, that the number of elderly are going to double by the year 2030. So, hopefully PERSAD in their new space will be able to offer more community services. People can come in, hang out, be with friends, and but it's a problem for the community in general.
And Buzz, to maybe end this on a positive note, one of the things you've said is what you're sensing is that in younger generations, in terms of the people that will be handling what Kathy calls the silver tsunami in the future, that there are changing attitudes and much more of an idea of acceptance of who people are.
I think that's true. I think the younger people really don't care that much about sexuality. And it's sort of comforting to know that attitudes are being changed. And I think that most of the people that are supportive of LGBTQ people are the younger folks. And I think that, you know, when you have this inbred bigotry that you think you usually learn from your parents, this is the whole thing. And it's one of those things that is passed on from generation to generation. But I think the younger people now, especially the college kids and the young professionals, are more accepting of the LGBTQ community. And like you say, those are going to be people that are going to be the people that will be this what you call the silver tsunami. I like that. Will be turning to for help, and I think that it will be more forthcoming. Another thing of people with HIV. A lot of times whenever you go to the doctors, they ask you all these questions, and one of the things that's on there is HIV. So if you're honest with them, they'll know that who you are, and maybe just because you have HIV doesn't mean you're LGBTQ.
Right.
That's another story.
Well, if we haven't learned that from the Matthew McConaughey's Academy Award winning performance, then there are plenty of other places to learn that.
I think another thing that wasn't brought up today was the fact that there are a lot of people, especially men and women, who have been married, have children, and are LGBTQ, and a lot of times they're fearful of letting their family know all their sexuality. And it makes for a very difficult situation with dynamics between father or mother and their children. I think mostly this, I think not so much women, but I think men, it's a bigger problem.
And it's a challenge, but unfortunately it is necessary, certainly, to be as forthcoming as possible with information about yourself so that you can be treated properly.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you have to be honest with your doctors. And I think what is happening now, especially with the Pittman study, we have one of our board members is a physician, and he is coming up with a list of healthcare professionals who are LGBTQ friendly.
Well, it's been an enlightening conversation. I want to thank you both for taking part in it. Buzz Pusateri, a retired pharmacist who was diagnosed as HIV positive in the early 1980s. He's chair of the Pitt Men's Study Community Advisory Board. And Kathy Boyle, coordinator of Older Adult Services for the Persad Center and part of the national group SAGE, Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. Kathy Boyle, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And coming up, a conversation with playwright Willie Holtzman and artistic director Tracy Brigden about creating the musical Smart Blonde. It's about the life of actress Judy Holliday. It's premiering at City Theater, and we'll talk about it when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.